Mark, I know that you must be excited to know that your son is actually coming out and playing in the NV5 event here. And I think the last time I saw you was at Olympia Fields, and you were following him around the University of Illinois tournament. He was playing for Florida. But how much do you get a chance to get out and watch him play on tour?
Well, I get what I do when I can. Actually, he's going to come. He's playing the PGA Tour now, but he's on a medical leave. He's got a shoulder issue. He's going to come up and spend the week with us during the NV5 tournament here, just to visit with Dick Wright. Tyler represents NV5, but I get a chance to watch him 4 or 5 times a year. I'm obviously always following him and his progress, but I get to see him several times a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a great history with the Western Golf Association, an exciting win at one of the hardest courses on tour, Butler National, and I believe you won it in a playoff on Monday morning against Peter Jacobson. What do you remember about that special week?
Well, you'll be surprised how much Chicago is part of my career. My first week on tour, I qualified on a Monday at Flossmoor to get into the Western Open in 78. I played 21 straight years in this tournament. I won it twice. I won it in 83 against Watson. I was fortunate to come out on top by a shot. And 89 was the playoff. And you're right, we finished. It seems like we had a lot of rain delays, and the Salt Creek rose up over that golf course. So we were late on Sunday finishing. We went and actually put the peg in the ground on the 10th hole of the playoff, and Peter and I looked at each other and said, "This is too dark." I think our official was a little bit nervous. I said, "Can we come back and play when we can see?" And we came back the next morning. I remember it well. I was very fortunate to win. We started on 1 in the playoff, little dog leg left, and I hit it up there close and hit a pretty good putt that burned the edge, didn't go in. And Peter had about a 4-footer for par, and I literally was putting my glove on to go to the second hole, the par 5, and the ball lipped out. So it was a mixed emotion. Obviously, I was very happy to win, but he's a good friend. You don't want to win that way, but I was still very happy to win, and we've remained very good friends. Chicago golf has been a big part of my life, and as you mentioned, my son Tyler, he played, was runner-up in a Western Junior, played in several Western amateurs, so I have a real affinity toward the WGA and the Evans Scholars Program, because I grew up as a caddy in public golf. So, and when I first played this tournament, we were still using the Evans caddies. We couldn't bring our own tour caddies. So I got to experience that for several years.
Mm-hmm. One of your big wins on tour was the Players' Championship, and when you see the guys out there now battling it, what goes through your mind? And do you think back to that great week that you played so well? And it seems like that was a week that a lot of the guys that maybe were expected to win were, I believe as Dan Jenkins wrote, sitting at the airport on Friday. But you were blowing away the golf course.
That course does that every year to people. I played 20 straight years in that tournament. That's my hometown, so that made it extra special. But as an analyst for, I work for different networks. Now I do PGA Tour Radio, the analyst for that tournament. And that's one of the things I think everybody has made the comment about the Players' Championship at the stadium course at Sawgrass. It doesn't favor any one player. You've got to have everything working that week. You've got to drive it straight. Your short game's got to be good. Mentally, you've got to be tough. You got to be patient. So you see winners from, long hitters like Fred Couples and Davis Love and Greg Norman. And then you see players like Calvin Peed and Fred Funkwin, who are shorter hitters. But they were on their games that week. And even when you think about a Tiger, greatest player of our latest 50-year era, he's only won it twice. And to say only won it twice, for him, that's not very many. So it's special to me because I really was playing well that year. I had only had 1 round over par. I shot 1 over par at the Honda when it blew 30 miles an hour on one day. But other than that, I think my stroke average was 67 or 8 coming into the tournament. I knew I was playing well, but that doesn't always mean you're going to win. But it just was a special week. I opened with 65, and I think I was 1 shot behind after 2 days and led the rest of the week. So it was special to win there. It's the strongest field of the year every year of any tournament we play, so it means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see golf evolving to? Obviously, there's so much talk about other tours. Greg Norman's involved with the Saudi group, but yet there's even another tour trying to get in there. Do you think the days of just the PGA Tour and the European Tour and maybe the Japanese Tour are going to see more tours, more competition? And there is so many good players, as you know, out there today that are trying to make their way in professional golf.
That's a very good question you pose. I don't have a crystal ball to know what the future will show. One thing is interesting. The PGA Tour is the premium tour in the world. No one would argue that. It's got an incredibly rich history. But I do admit, you know, there's only one PGA Tour event that can be played every week. Our former commissioner, Dean Beeman, had what I thought was a great idea that never got entertained very long. He was thinking of the idea of proposing, like, for example, an American and National League of the PGA Tour. While you're playing in L.A., you're playing in Miami. And while you're playing in New York, you're playing in Dallas. Where, to think what that would do, that would double the amount of players that could play. And let's say you play 25 events that way, and you meet, the best players meet for the Masters, for the Open, and some of the Invitationals. That would be a way to increase it. But you're right. There's two other big tours that are being proposed right now, creating quite an uproar. Who knows how it'll shake out? I do know one thing. When I was a kid, I grew up putting at a public course under lights across the street from my house, thinking this is to win the Jacksonville Open, this is to win the Byron Nelson, this is to win the U.S. Open, this is to win the Masters, playing all those games in my head, because I got to see as a kid Palmer do it and Nicklaus do it and all these great players. I caddied for Patty Berg when I was a kid when she played my public course. So my love of the game was motivated by the rich history that the PGA Tour brought. I just don't know if you just have a tour that is for a lot of money, which is wonderful. No one minds making a great living, but where is the history? I know you can build it, but that won't happen overnight. I just don't know how that will work. But I can certainly see professional golf growing. How that'll be identified, I don't know. But I certainly appreciate what the PGA Tour has done for me and the rich history that it's provided.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was some talk this past week or so about the fact that there's a tournament in Mexico, but yet there's markets like Chicago, Boston, Philly, New York that don't have a tournament this year on the PGA Tour. And it seems like the USGA has wanted to take some of their events repeatedly to the same venues. And I talked to somebody in the tennis world a few years back, and they said, you know, one of the great things about golf is so many people get exposed to the game because three of the majors are in the United States and they move around. The only tennis major is in New York every year. Nobody else in the country gets to see that. And their game, a lot of their majors are in other countries. So would you believe that or agree that, you know, being able to move around in different cities helps the game of golf because so many people get to see, when the tour comes to town, the best players in the world?
Yeah, getting to see the best players in the world in person, especially for a young person, it's very motivating. I know in my hometown of Jacksonville, Florida, to get to see the Jacksonville Open, I caddied for George Bear one year, Gary Player, when I was in high school. It really stimulated my desire to want to play golf. But golf does travel. I'm sad that there's not a regular event. I felt bad for the Western Golf Association. This is my feel. I've never talked to them about this, but I feel like I've got a relationship with them after all my years being here, winning a couple times their championship, that the Western Open isn't still here. Now, years and years ago, it traveled around the country, but I thought it found a great home. I think I'm right in saying this. There's more majors been played in Chicago than any other one city when you go back to the very beginning of major golf. But, you know, it's nice that our majors do move around. And I understand why, for example, a U.S. Open goes to traditional courses. I can understand why they go to the Shinnecocks and the Wingfoots and the Olympic Clubs, the Pebble Beaches, because they do move around, and those are venues that have storied history. The other thing I like about it, because I'm a golf history nut, I like that you can play at Pebble Beach with all the modern equipment, the modern talent, and compare yourself to when Nicklaus won there, or to when someone else won there. You can go to Wingfoot and compare yourself to Billy Casper when he won there. You can go to Oakmont and compare yourself to the winners there. So in that sense, the majors do move around, except for Augusta, but then that's a one-off, unique, one of the greatest experiences ever, getting to play there 13 different years. It was a highlight for me. But I do think golf is open for everybody. I think golf still moves around enough. But I would love to see a permanent tournament. Now we've got Korn Ferry, which is wonderful. Happy to be here, you know, for the kickoff of this NB5 Old National Bank tournament. But I wish there was a PGA Tour event every year. I really do.
Yeah, I know the golf fans do too. You mentioned being a golf history nut, but you've also been a golf architecture nut. I know that you were designing courses for a while. What's happening with your design business?
Well, I'm back kind of busy with that. We've designed over 40 golf courses around the world. And so people don't realize my older brother started a family landscape business in 1970. And I was actually designing landscape plans before I got my tour card. So we had always wanted to get into the golf course design construction business. And the first course we ever designed, the Ravines, we did it when I got my tour card. I was in the middle of getting my card in the late 70s. So we've been doing design and construction of golf courses. That whole industry slowed down in about 2008 with the economy. But now it's a major boom right now. And believe it or not, it's one of the only good things about COVID. It got people outside again playing. And you've probably experienced that up here. Courses are prospering again now rather than struggling. And maybe it's from some of the moms and dads who are working remote now, don't have to go to an office downtown, so they've got more time to be on a golf course. Whatever the reason, I'm happy. And I'm back doing, you know, design work. We never stopped, but it just slowed down. And where I was in my career, I wasn't pursuing it hard. But I've got a 36-hole project down in Florida that we're renovating. And it's something I love. My love for working. I work in my yard. I love horticulture. I love working with my hands. So I really enjoy very much the golf design and building business.
Mark, finally, it's amazing. So many of the destination properties are building a par 3 course. Have you built any of those? Or are you talking to anybody about doing it?
Yeah, we've built short courses. Yeah, we built a course several years ago down in Fort Lauderdale. It's all past grass. It's a, I don't like the term executive. It's 18 holes, but it's a smaller yardage wise, 5,000 plus yards. But I really think because of lifestyles being so busy today, probably too busy. Families are so scattered. Mom and dads are working. I think there is a need, and it's happening, to build different variety. Golf is golf. If you play one hole or 18 holes, and you're seeing 6-hole golf courses, 12-hole golf courses, we're trying to incorporate in some designs building a golf course that's an 18-hole golf course, but the way you lay it out, you can go play 1, 2, 3, and you're back to the clubhouse and can stop. Or you can go out and pick up number 6, jump over to 15 where you can get back to the clubhouse. Different routes with several different scorecards. So we're trying to think that way because you don't want to miss out. If you don't have 4 or 5 hours to play golf, you still want to be able to enjoy it for an hour or two and go play golf. So that is something we're doing. A lot of architects are doing that.